I'm Arun Venugopal, sitting in for Leonard today. Whether you have an apartment, a condo, or an actual home, things leak, break, they fall apart, which is why we love having Alvin and his son Lawrence Ubel come by every other month to try and help you with all your home repair issues. They're otherwise known as the gurus of how-to, and officially they're from the Accurate Building Inspectors in Brooklyn. Guys, thanks for joining me today.
Our pleasure.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
We show up. We want to help. You know, that's what we want to do.
Yes, that's the greatest part of this job is that we really need help people that need help. That's the greatest part. Mm-hmm. I love that part.
All right. So before we begin, if anyone listening does have a question, something that needs solving in terms of your home, you have lots of options to get answers. Either give us a call at 212-433-9692 or that's 9692 or be in touch on Facebook or send us a tweet. Our handle is at Leonard Lopate. All right.
One of the things that we wanted to talk about was I think a revelation that my father discovered was about stairs.
Yeah, that's stair accidents in particular, versus automobile accidents. Stair accidents has become the second to automobile accidents. There are approximately 3 million automobile injuries every year in the United States, approximately, and it changes from year to year. And there's a million stair accidents every year. That's number two. And the solution to that is so simple.
Ban stairs.
That would be one. Banning stairs would be one, but that would make it really...
You can't do that.
Well, no, because then all of a sudden, all those second, third, and fourth floors would become useless.
Then the terrorists win.
Right. Exactly.
Yes, the thing is that for over 50 years ago, I studied architecture at Pratt Institute, and we're talking about a subject matter called soft stair technology. In all that 50 years, I've never heard it come up in any discussion of the promulgation of any rules, regulations, or laws in the city, the state, or the federal government. Nobody wants to talk about the soft stair technology. And every architect that's listening today that took a course on stair design knows about soft technology, but I don't see it happening. And what that really means is getting rid of the sharp edges on a stair, getting rid of all the pointed newel posts, having a wall at the bottom of the stair. It should be at least 6 feet away from the bottom of the stair, because when you come down a stair and you're falling down that stair and the wall is only 3 feet away from the bottom or 4 feet away, you smash right into that wall. And if you have a window, you fly out the window. There's so many things that could take place. Steps themselves have sharp corners. Mm-hmm. What are they doing with sharp corners? They should be rounded off. Some of them are, but not a lot of them are not.
Okay, so soft meaning not like squishy, but soft corners.
Soft corners, round, but also no sharp points.
But the other thing also is that a lot of stair accidents happen for two reasons. One is neglect or lack of deferred maintenance, as we like to call it in the field. In other words, you're just not fixing things like handrails that are loose, treads that are loose, things of that nature. And the other thing, which I find very often during my home and apartment inspections, is just poor construction. In other words, every step in a flight should be exactly the same height from each other, and that's called the riser. And a lot of times they're all over the place. The problem is there's a thing with us humans called the psychomotor function, which is when you go off a first step, your body measures that distance. And it just repeats that action over and over and over again. That's why when you go down steps, you don't really think about it. You're just flying down the steps.
Right.
But the first one, if you really slow down to think about it, you really do reach for that step. And your body measures it. And then you go down the whole flight. If all of a sudden one of the steps in the middle of the run or at the bottom of the run is off, that's when you trip. And there are a lot of videos, especially of the New York subway system, where people are constantly tripping on the same step. And they have videos of this. And it's because that stair height is off by maybe an inch and a half or an inch, and it throws everybody off, and they trip and fall. And that's a big reason for a lot of these injuries.
Yes, and there should be legislation. In the middle of the 1960s, I was a guest of Nelson Rockefeller in the promulgation of the rules and regulations of construction.
Nelson Rockefeller, governor of New York.
Yes, at that time. And when it came up about stair design, which I, which is my bailiwick. That's what I really, I love. And
he's
I
a
do,
passion for steps.
I'm a passion for steps. And when it came up to the soft stair technology, the public relations companies, the lobbyists, they came in with such heavy arguments against that soft stair technology that it never appeared in anything that we had recommended.
Why, it's more expensive? Or?
It they don't want to change. The mere fact that a million people every year get injured as a result of bad stairs. And I can't believe that a builder, a developer, an architect, it could be your grandchild, your child that could fall down those stairs. It could be your wife. It could be your husband. It could be somebody. Don't they realize that when you use a set of stairs, you're defying gravity? And when you fall down a flight of stairs,
gravity prevails.
I love my work, but I hate the accidents.
Mm-hmm. All right, we got lots of callers.
Yep.
Trying to get through to you. Let's go to, is this Moses in New Jersey?
Hello?
Yeah, hello?
Hi.
Hi, Moses.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's up?
I got a question. I have an apartment, and we're redoing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got hardwood floors throughout. We're putting them in.
Yep.
And most apartments I've seen have a transition to tile for the kitchen. Can I just keep going with the hardwood floor? I've never seen hardwood in the kitchen. Is there
right.
a reason for that?
And there is a reason for that, because for two reasons. One is if there's ever a water issue, like your sink leaks or whatever, and especially if you happen to be using oak, and the wood gets wet, the oak is going to turn black, and you can never get it the right color again. That's number one. The number two reason is that the wear patterns tend to be very defined in a kitchen. It's usually around that critical triangle between your sink, your cooktop, and your refrigerator. So you'll end up seeing a wear pattern on the floor, which would, you know, again, you'll end up having to refinish your floor. I have to suggest an alternative to that, which is the use of porcelain tile, which now they make in simulated wood. And the interesting thing is, if you buy a box of 10, these long tiles, each one is different. So it really does look like wood, but it does, but it has an amazing wear life. So the lifetime of it is, I just put that in my kitchen and I'm very happy with it. And it looks like wood, and it looks good, and it wears well.
And besides that, these new kind of tiles they have good frictional resistance, so that when it does get wet, you don't slip all over the place. Mm-hmm. The biggest problem in a kitchen area or in a bathroom area is slip and fall accidents. And so you have to try to figure out a way to give people a little bit more frictional resistance than they expect.
I have to say that in the apartments and houses I inspect with wood floors, they tend to not last very long. So that's why people are kind of shy away from that.
All right. Thank you, Moses, for calling
you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You guys want to tell me a little about this quiz you got today?
Yes, that quiz. As everybody knows that listens to the show, what we ask is a word that will give you some hints about the word, and you guess the word. If you figure out what the word is, you get a prize at the end.
Which is Save Money, Save Energy by Al Ubell and George Merlis.
I'm glad you said that.
Right.
Here it is. What is the name of the opening access into a revolving door?
What is the name of the opening access into a revolving door? All right.
Yep.
Cogitate over that. Okay, let's take another call. We're going to go to Jennifer in Rye. Jennifer, you there?
Yes, I am.
Something having to do with some kind of stench is emanating.
Yeah, what's going on?
It is. First, I'll say I just know two people that have had serious accidents falling downstairs within the last week.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for bringing that up.
I want to say one thing about staircase. Use the handrails. They're there for a reason. I know most people don't like touching them, so walk around with Purell if you want. But I have to say, and another interesting thing is that the department, the subway, the transit authority, actually converted a lot of their handrails from painted handrails to stainless steel, so at least they visually look cleaner. So, but use the handrails. They do actually work. For me, they're like seatbelts of steps. You don't always need them, but you really want them to be there. So, on a lot of these accidents, where people take the handrails off of their stairs, and that's a problem also. Anyway,
a little more to that is that a stair, any stair that doesn't have a handrail, is an accident waiting to happen. A handrail is a safety tool to stabilize yourself in the event you feel a little dizzy, you trip on something, somebody leaves roller skates or marbles on the stair. Children, you gotta have handrails. If you have a house that doesn't have handrails, at least on one side, if it's over 44 inches wide, you have to have handrails on both sides.
That's kind of scary just to look at a staircase without a handrail.
I know, but it's you see it all the time. Anyway, tell me about your stench.
My brother's just moved into a row house in Toronto. It's over 100 years old.
Okay.
And it smells like cat pee.
Okay.
To try and eliminate this smell, he's put an ozone machine in the basement.
Yep.
He's painted the entire basement, including the ceiling, like which is the floor of the first floor.
Uh-huh.
And you can still really smell it.
Okay. I'm going to suggest something a little bit different. He needs to dehumidify the basement because, for the most part, that smell is trapped within the moisture that's in, which is embedded into everything. And if you can get the humidity down in the basement down, all those smells will come out. When they're in the moisture, they'll go down the drain. Once the dehumidifier converts it back into water and lets it drain, I would try dehumidifying. I also have to say that when I first bought my house, my previous owners had a cat with carpet, and I think they had issues with their cat too. And it took a while for it to completely go away. I mean, it's just one of those things about cats. You got to really be on top of them as far as being, you know, a good parent, as it were, or owner. But I would try the dehumidification, maybe even dehumidify on the first level of the house also, where the smell is very bad. And once you get all that moisture out, it probably will go away. Okay?
Wow, thank you so much. That's great to know.
Okay.
All right, so if anybody does know the answer to the question of what the name of the opening access into a revolving door is, give us a call at 212-433-9692. All right, let's take somebody else. Emma Westport, are you there? Westport, Connecticut.
Hi, Emma.
Yes. Hi, hello.
Hi. What's up?
So just the word of the revolving door, access, I think is a rotunda.
No. But that's but we like that word.
That's a nice word.
It's a great word, but it's not have nothing to do with this.
I thought it had something to do with, like, you know, whatever. Anyway, so I'm calling about trees.
Yes.
We have a lot of trees on our property, and we can't afford to take down as many as we need but we have a dead tree that is, if it falls, it is kind of leaning towards the house.
Yes.
And on another portion of the property, we have like a 160-year-old tree that has dead branches that need to come down.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and got a price, you know, like $1,200 cash to take them two down. But right now, my husband, we've done a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
We moved out here a while ago. My husband said we spent
too much money. So what's the question?
How imperative is it to take down those trees? Because he says, let's wait through the winter. And I say, no.
I'm going to go with dead trees. I'm going to go with you on this one and say that you really do need to remove, especially one. I mean, you could do a little geometry and see what the fall pattern would be and see if it actually would hit your house. But that's, you know, I'm hoping that you're good at geometry and you pass that regent. It really would have to. It really would have to be, you know, if it's somewhere, anywhere near the house, a dead tree needs to come down.
Yes, that's the reason for that, by the way, is that when a tree dies, that's grounds for the termites to start attacking that tree. And as the termites come in and eat the bottom of the tree, it weakens the strength of the tree to be vertical, and then eventually that tree will fall over. While the tree is alive, it's able to fight off the termites, the powder post beetles, the carpenter ants, and all the other insects that are attacking a tree.
The wood
but once
insects.
The tree is dead, that's all bets are off. The termites, the old house borers, everything come to that tree, and then the tree falls down.
Okay,
and what do you think about those branches on this old tree? They're giant branches. If they could
get
like, my worry is they could crack off.
Yeah,
you know, from
they
ice.
Should. I agree.
And fall
I,
on top of one of us, or
especially if we, especially if we have another bad snowstorm or ice storm where it would over stress and overload the branches. These branches are going to come down, and I got to tell you, my feeling about our winters are they're not going to get all that much better.
Yeah.
So that's
when,
just me.
When a tree is dead, it gets brittle, and it's those branches are going to start breaking off by themselves.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Emma from Westport. Alvin and Lawrence Ubel, our gurus of how-to, are here answering your questions about home repair. If you'd like to speak with them, give us a call at 212-433-9692. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org or tweet at Leonard Lopate. That's tweet two at Leonard Lopate. We'll have more after a break. This is Arun Vandegopal. I'm sitting in for Leonard today, and I've got Alvin and his son Lawrence Ubel, our gurus of how-to, with me, and they're taking calls. So if you've got calls, ring up 212-433-9692. We've also got a quiz on hand, and that would be the question of the day is, what is the name of the opening access into a revolving door? So if you call and you get it right, you get a prize. All right, so let's go to another call. Let's see. Helene in Manhattan, are you there?
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Hi, I live in a studio apartment, a rent-stabilized on the Upper West Side. It only has, and with very high ceilings and high windows, 12-foot high ceilings, and there's only one radiator. What would you suggest that I use as a supplement to heat?
Well, I don't know the size or the configuration of that radiator, and I don't know the type of heating system you have. That would all come into the factors, whether you have a hot water hydronic system or a steam system, and whether the steam system is a single pipe or two pipe system, and what kind of radiation distribution system you have there. But in most instances, if it's an open radiator that is depicted in most cartoons and everything else, you could increase the what they call the convector operation of that radiator by putting two plates of metal on both sides or aluminum and make it into a vector radiator.
It already has that.
Yeah.
And you're saying that you're not getting – and this is a steam radiator?
Does it have an –
about 18 by 18, the main studio room with a little kitchen and a little bathroom.
And what floor of the building are you on?
I'm sorry?
What floor?
It's an old brownstone.
And what floor are you on?
First floor.
You're on the first floor. What you might be able to do to get a little bit more heat out of that is maybe have – are you the owner or you rent?
You know, I'm a renter.
Yeah, maybe you could get your landlord – to put
us. Forget it.
Okay, sorry about that.
Well,
okay. And you already have a piece of metal on the front and the back of the radiator?
Yeah, I put aluminum foil in back, and it already has an aluminum grate in front.
Okay, I would actually try. Now, so you actually have a cover over the radiator, right?
Yeah.
I would take the cover off. Completely,
yeah.
Completely. Take the cover off the radiator completely and see if that helps, because the covers do sometimes stifle, because you have a cast iron radiator inside, and the cast iron radiator is not a convector, and the way it works the best is if it shoot heat out in all directions. And so if you have this cover over it, you're stifling that activity. So I would try taking it off altogether and see if that actually puts more heat into the room.
What if it doesn't? Is there anything to supplement the heat?
Except for an electric radiator,
electric heater.
Electric oil-based radiator, which a lot of people have. But other than that, there's not really a lot you can do, except change the size of the radiator, get a bigger radiator. Again, something the landlord has to do, which they're not going to do.
Well, but anyways, there are other things that can be done. If it's a steam radiator, those people, and they have a single pipe system with an air valve on one side, instead of having that single air valve, if you get a couple of fittings and elbows and put two air valves on, that means the heat will come up into that radiator before anybody else, because the steam will go to the point of least resistance. And if you put less resistance on that radiator, that radiator will get hot first. Mm-hmm. And the valve, the hand valve that shuts the thing off or turns it on, has to be fully apertured, opened completely, and maybe that'll help. As far as she's saying that what if it doesn't help, but like Lauren says, that those radiators have two functions. They distribute heat in the area by convection and also by radiation. And by having an enclosure the way that she has, she is stifling both the convection and the radiation.
Mm-hmm. I can't stop thinking about those 12-foot ceilings. Apparently there is a downside, huh?
Yes, the heat goes right up to the ceiling first.
All right. Apparently some people are calling in with their answers, right or wrong, to your quiz question. Let's go to Jerry. You're in Manhattan.
Yes, hi. Is it airlock?
No, sorry.
Airlock is wrong.
No, it's not an airlock.
It's not an airlock. Sorry, Jerry. All right, let's try somebody else. How about Kevin from Wilton, Connecticut? What's your answer?
Well, it's a type of aperture. I'd call it an annulus.
No, that's not it.
That's not what we're looking for.
Annulus, huh?
But okay. I do love these words that people are coming up with. We have a very smart audience.
The smartest. Let's try Daniel from Union, New Jersey. Got an answer for our quiz?
Hi, Dan.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
I think it's called the throat.
So now I ask the obligatory question. Why do you know that?
he knows too much.
A friend of mine's father owned a revolving door and automated entrance systems company when I was growing up. He sponsored our sports team, so... I used to spend time at the warehouse there.
Is he still in the business?
I lost contact with them. I don't know. I don't think so, though.
Okay. Anyway, hold on. One of the producers will take all your information, and you'll get a copy of Save Money, Save Energy by Alvin Ubell and George Merlis.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
I like that, the throat.
Yes.
It sounds like a very ominous sort of a name.
I came across it because I have a matter involving a revolving door, and I was doing a lot of research, and all of a sudden I come across that word, and I tell Lawrence, and Lawrence says, that's the word for the week.
There you go.
Because, you know, the problem is we find words. Sometimes we find words that are so esoteric that no one gets it, or it's so simple that they get it in 5 seconds. You know, so getting a word like this that has a bunch of people coming up with it.
I'm wondering what the previous guy said an annulus, and I'm like, what exactly is an annulus? Anyways, I won't ask. All right, so let's see if we have any other questions, people here. I'm going to go to David in Teaneck, New Jersey. You got a question?
Hi, David.
I didn't have a question. I just had a comment about two things you had mentioned earlier. One about was the cat urine smell.
Yeah.
And I just found that if you take a vaporizer and you put vinegar in it and you sort of saturate the air with the vinegar, that it takes away the smell.
Yes, that would help also because it counteracts the ammonia in the urine. And yes, that would help also. You are correct.
Yes.
So hopefully those people are still listening and they'll try that.
Okay.
But don't use balsamic vinegar because it gets sticky. But it's nice. It's lovely with a little olive oil.
Lemon juice. Great.
Yeah, but that would be for the local.
It's all about context, isn't it?
It is, really.
It's all about context.
Yes, and what was the other comment?
The other thing is that the metal copper sheathing, or copper counters, it's been shown that copper kills viruses and bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very effective. The higher the percentage of copper in the alloy, the greater the killing ability. And if they really wanted to make things in the subway and other places sterile, they would just use copper.
You are correct. The problem is it's not necessarily what really is the facts. It's what the perception of people are. So if they do a stainless steel and you clean it, stainless steel looks cleaner than copper because copper will get that green patina and that will not look clean. It may be clean because looking and being are two different things, as we well know. And the perception is that if it looked like it has that green patina and unevenness, people probably wouldn't touch it. But stainless steel, it looks clean, so they feel, oh, how dirty could it be?
There's a cost issue.
Well, which in reality, we know that all the things that make us sick, you can't see anyway.
Yes, and about copper, as strange as it may seem, is that the largest depository of copper is here in the city of New York. under the streets of the city of New York.
In the form of wires.
Wires and everything else.
So anyway, that's a good point, but you know,
it's incredibly expensive, isn't it? It's like, yeah, it's what people were stripping out when they go in and start stripping out houses. Right.
Well, yeah. Anyway.
All right.
So that was a good couple of comments.
All right. Let's go to Juliana in Manhattan. Are you there?
Yes.
Yes, I am.
What's up?
Okay. I read years ago that the perfect stairway is 7 inches high and 11 inches deep. The riser is 7.
Right.
Well, actually.
Yeah, but let her finish her comment.
Oh, go ahead.
Yes?
Okay. So at 77, I find it very hard to climb stairs. But when I do, and it's those measurements, remarkable.
Yeah, well, actually, the way that goes back, first of all, let's understand stair design dates back over 2,000 years to the Roman Empire by an architect by the name of Vitruvius, who figured out, with using Pythagorean theorem, how to make steps proportionate from foot to head. And he came up with that calculation that it's about 11 by 7 3/4. And if you multiply the tread times the riser, it should be between 70 and 75. And that's been going on for a long time. But it has changed somewhat in the modern code to be a little bit more accurate, and the tolerances have become more sharper. And I think that was a good change in the modern code today. But the most important thing is that the steps should be consistent. You should have handrails on both sides, and they should not be slippery. The steps should be nice and tight. And hopefully.
But let me ask you a question. So you're saying that 7-inch rise is good for you?
Yes.
At
my age.
Yeah.
And with arthritis.
Yes, I totally understand. I just want to say one thing is that the problem is if they make the treads too low, then the flight of steps get longer because you need more steps. If you make them too high, yes, you can compact the steps more, but now you're almost turning it into a ladder.
That's right.
Yeah, so there's a lot of
there's a lot of combinations that goes into an architect could build the skyscrapers of the world, but his biggest problem is fitting the stairs into his cavities in order to let people transfer from one floor to the next.
Now, are stairs designed differently, say, for a senior center than they are for the regular population?
Well, they do have different kind of criteria if it is a senior citizens facility. Also for schools, they have two sets of handrails, one at about 30 inches and another one at about 25 inches for children to grab a hold of the handrails. Also, the widths of stairs have changed. Also, what has changed dramatically as a result of 9/11 is the fact that what they call a scissor stairs are absolutely unacceptable, where you have one set of stairs underneath another set of stairs, and they're two separate stairs. And if there's a fire in one set of stairs and not in the other one, the people that rush into the empty stairwell get fried in a frying pan.
Yeah, but the other thing is that that graphic description notwithstanding, is that what they've also done, and the biggest problem they had, is now they're making in these big high-rise buildings the stairs wider. Because even though you go down the steps, even in this building, you're probably not going to go side by side with someone because of people's natural sway when they walk. So they had to make them wider. And also the fact that they had to get why all the people were leaving, the first responders could not get up the steps, and that was a problem also. Anyway,
but I'm just wondering in terms of, like, I find a small stair is really annoying. It's like you feel like you're stepping too much and your foot's it's a very awkward movement. But is it easier when you're older, somebody who's
You mean a short height?
Is it easier when you get older?
Well, when it gets too low, it depends upon. There are called monumental stairs, is where the tread is 2 feet wide, and then you can have 6-7 inches. That's okay. That's then you get into a pace of going up the steps,
like at stadiums,
a stadium.
Right.
But you have to design a stair for the ergonomics of a human being. You know, how are they? What is the average height of a human being? What is the magic? What is the normal step of a human being? And so the stairs, they found over the years what works and what doesn't work. And so they promulgated relationships to what kind of stair it is. Mm-hmm. In residential buildings, they are the worst.
All right, so guys, how can listeners get in touch with you?
They can write me at larryubel@gmail.com, and please include your telephone number because I'll probably end up calling you because these things are way too long back and forth.
And the next time we will be here, we will again show all of America how to go forth and fix, save energy, money, and
do it safely.
We'll be right back.